very much for timing. Oh, sure, I'm sorry. So, okie doke. So, my name is Mary. I am a compulsive overeater, and I did think there would be another speaker, so I'll speak for 20 minutes, and then we'll open it up for sharing. Let me see, what can I think I'll start by telling you my story for 5 minutes, because I don't know too many people in this room, and I don't think you know me, and then we'll go into the attitude of gratitude, which dovetails right into it. I came into OA close to 36 years ago. I am 55 years old today. I was 19 back then. I came to OA because I had no clue how to stop eating. All I knew was that I was started yo-yo dieting when I was about 13 years old, and between the ages of 13 and 19, I progressively took off and put on, I progressively took off weight and progressively put on more and more pounds until I wound up in OA after reading a Dear Abby column. I probably over 200 pounds. I don't know how much I weighed. I stopped weighing myself. I have a large family with a bunch of brothers. I grew out of all of their clothing because I wouldn't buy. And once I grew out of my size 16s, because I had from 6 to 16 in my closet, I would wear them until I went to my first meeting in my father's pants. And my father is a solid guy. And I wish I could say everything was happily ever after that. But I did have a history of relapsing, and my story basically is one of I came to believe, I got my recovery, and then I left because I thought I was okay. And I did that about 6 times over a good chunk of years. And what I learned about myself over the past, I've been abstinent now for 4 years. I mean, I have a lot more abstinent days behind me than I have non-abstinent days, but every time I picked up the food, and I am a sugar addict. Sugar is my killer food, as I've heard people refer to their foods here. I was losing soul cells. That's how a friend of mine once said it. That there were some skills and tools of living that I was not learning because I always had my sugar binge up my sleeve. So if life just got a little bit too hard, and it just kept getting harder and harder, rather than learning how to work through it, I would go and I would binge, and then I would get back on track. And about, you know, I mean, I thought I had control over that. It seemed like I could just get right back on track again. But I sometimes compare it to watching a cat play with a mouse, and it lets the mouse get away and think the mouse is getting away, and then the cat knows exactly where it's, what it wants and how it's going to get it. And that's how the disease was with me. It seemed like I was getting away with it. And I heard at a meeting once, when you choose to dance with a gorilla, the gorilla decides when to stop. And that was every time I picked up that food, it was the gorilla, me dancing with the gorilla, thinking I was leading the gorilla until I tried to stop, and I couldn't stop. So I did eventually come back. A lot of story in between then and now, but I did get, my husband and I moved to Seattle 4 years ago. I was in one of my kind of I can handle it on my own parts of the phases, and I couldn't. I was slipping, I was sliding, I was using sugar, I was trying to tell myself. I was in that place of, you know, the mental obsession telling me that I could get away with it. And then I wound up back in OA in Seattle and realized that, you know, I really had to do something differently, that regardless of the years of abstinence I had behind me, there was nothing that really didn't help when it was 10 o'clock in the evening and I just put myself to bed and I wanted to binge. And I could tell you all the nutritional reasons, all the psychodynamic reasons, all the spiritual reasons why I shouldn't do it. But at 10:30, I was in my car going on my little spree and then thinking, okay, well, I can get away with it this time. So what happened when I came back to OA in Seattle was that I started following directions, and this is where the gratitude, practicing an attitude of gratitude and acting as if, really came in handy. And when not came in handy, they have become the cornerstone of my program. And when Judith asked me to speak on this, I thought, oh, I don't want to speak on this, because I always thought that gratitude and acting as if were kind of, you know, the weenie things. Okay, so I'm going to say thank you and I'm going to act as if. And, you know, really, that's, I came into this program, you know, besides the physical piece of this disease, which is, you know, a physical craving, there is my emotional and mental piece of this program is that I have a disease of negativity, of self-pity. I can get into this whole victim thing. And I have found that gratitude is a great antidote for that kind of thinking. But where I would get all slipped up was I had this notion that I had to feel like doing it. If I didn't feel grateful, then I'm not grateful. And that's where the act as if comes in. And I always thought, well, act as if, that's not being true to myself if I have to act as if. Well, you know, I act as if in a lot of other ways that had me, you know, out binging. So this time what I started asking people who had what I wanted, and what they started talking to me about was that I could act myself into right thinking. I could act myself into right thinking, not think myself into right acting. And I had it flipped around. So I thought, well, I really can't be grateful unless I'm feeling grateful. So I started practicing, okay, well, let me find some things to be grateful for. If I'm grateful just that I have a day's worth of abstinence, back then that's what it was, or I'm grateful that I have shoes that I can wear. I mean, little things that started kind of planting the seeds of that gratitude. And what started shifting was, and I can't say that this was a moment in time, because it is a process of learning that everything in my life, if I change my attitude about it, is an opportunity for me to learn and grow and develop and really deepen that relationship I have with the steps of the program. Because the steps, as you've heard probably many times throughout the day, the steps really are where the recovery is. And my mistake was just thinking, well, I've done enough step work, I'm good, see you guys later. And there I was, you know, 3 months back again with my tail between my legs, repeating the same cycle again. The whole piece of act as if, which, could you give me a five minute warning? Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. So where the act as if comes in is that just relating to the food, I really thought that once a craving hit me, because I would just get these cravings. I'd be in the middle of a movie theater and this craving to overeat would come. And I would just think that if I didn't eat, I was going to die, literally. I mean, I felt like, the disease had me by the throat. And I mean, I think we've all seen the movies of the junkies, and you just see them in that craving mode. Well, that could have been me. So when I came to Seattle and really realized, not because of any... any humility on my part? Well, part of it was humility, but most of it was desperation. I mean, I was 50 years old or 51 years old at that time, and I had a father-in-law that was in a nursing care center, and I remember I was on Aurora Avenue binging, and I thought, you know, I don't want to be 80 years old binging in a care center. If nothing changes, nothing changes. So there was nothing that would have... If I kept doing what I was doing, I was going to keep getting what I got, which was, you know, some good periods of abstinence, but then this staccato abstinence, I called it. I would just kind of leave after a while. So I started, people would give me suggestions, and it wasn't something that I would have thought to do, but they said, well, do it anyway. Well, I don't want to do it. So, you know, nobody ever, that's not ever been a requirement for membership is to want, or not a requirement for recovery. There's no real requirement for membership except to stop overeating. But the requirement to have the abstinence and the relief from the obsession, which I do have today, and I didn't believe that when I first came back 4 years ago, because I had 32 years of a pattern of this sporadic binging that I thought was bigger than I was. And it was a power greater than myself. So someone said, well, switch powers. And at that point, you know, I was feeling, you know, the power that I really could rely on at that point was the power of recovery in the rooms. It was a circle of women and men who were who had more power than I did at that moment. So that was a big act as if, and to act as if the craving would pass, and it did. I mean, that's the miracle of it, is that when that craving did come, and in the beginning it came pretty regularly. I wasn't one of those people who was just kind of bopped on the fairy, you know, the head with the fairy wand, and the compulsion just left. But there were lots of, you know, a lot of step work was act as if, and even, you know, it was just a few days ago, I had a big argument with a family member, and I felt so strongly that I was right, and I did not want to do anything. I didn't want to write. I didn't want to call my sponsor, and there was act as if again. Okay, Mary, act as, just have that, you know, that little iota of willingness that's maybe 1% more willing to do something than not to do it. Because, you know, I've never been entirely ready. Whenever I read the seventh step, sixth step became entirely ready. I have the 51% equation. As long as I'm 1% more willing than not willing, and I can sometimes push that over the edge a little bit, that's enough willingness. That if that can just get me to where I need to be, then that's just fine. Because, you know, what this program really has become, and I can say this 4 years down the road, I would hope 4 years ago when I first started out and I did not have this as my lived experience as the result of working the steps, I would hope that I could say that this program is a program of transformation and change. And that's what it has been, and it has been not because I've read the big book or because I've read the steps or because I've gone to the meetings. That's all been really essential, but it's been because I have followed directions and put that into practice. Because, you know, my standing up here and giving you my opinions, you don't need my opinion about abstinence. But what I think we all need is the experience of abstinence, that no matter what, I mean, I can be abstinent through the death of my father-in-law. I can be abstinent through two aging parents, through, you know, there's a lot of sad life on my plate right now, and food is not even on the radar screen. But I do know that if I'm not working, you know, 10, 11, and 12, as I've heard in all the rooms that we've, you know, that are around here today, that it's all that will only be a matter of time. And there are a lot of days when I don't want to do this. But I do know that what I want more than not is to have the recovery that I and many people who do what I've done. And there's no uniqueness about me. I used to think there was. I mean, someone once said to me, if you die of anything, it'll be of terminal uniqueness, because, you know, my disease was so much worse than anybody else's. So that act as if is that whole notion of transformation. And I heard on a, it was one of the, a speaker CD a couple months ago, I was walking, and there's this slogan, I think it's in all of the rooms, bring the body and the mind will follow. And this fellow said, bring the body and leave the mind that you came in with on the outside, because that's the mind that gets me into trouble all the time. That is the mind that tells me I can get away with it. That's the mind that says, well, I don't really have to do that tonight. Or that's the mind that can always find that little wiggle room to think that I can get away with it. So I really like that notion, because, and then someone else I heard say that, and I'm sure we've all heard this too, is that while I'm at the meetings, my disease is out in the parking lot doing push-ups. But she put it a different way. She said that too, but then she said, but it's also changing costume. So that when the food is no longer the issue, it becomes more subtle. And even with food, it can become a little bit subtle. And so the steps are there, and I know I'm kind of going around the corner to get to act as if. The steps are there that help me to really, by continually taking this action, regardless of what action it is, I, through the grace of this program and through a belief and reliance on a higher power, can start to see the patterns. And let me see. I wrote some notes. I usually don't do notes, but Yeah, this is something that I've learned. This is going back to that. Oh, yes, this whole notion of thinking that I need to be, whether it's with step three about making the decision or any one of the readiness steps, is that I had to be, and I think I mentioned, alluded to this before, that I just had to be struck by my higher power with serenity, or struck by my higher power with complete willingness, or struck by my higher power to be abstinent. And that goes back to the act as if, is that, oh, 5 minutes, so that I just, you know, I can't, I have a part in that miracle happening. And part of it is certainly surrendering. A huge part of it is that process of surrender where I, you know, ask for the strength and the willingness, and, you know, the higher power that I believe in is looking out for my good all the time, whether, you know, regardless of what that power is, that if I ask for it and then I act as if I've got it, then that is what creates it. And a lot now, it's very interesting that a lot of this neuroplasticity is saying that our brain patterns, you know, we have these tracks. And I had a lot of really kind of, I used to think of them as that Olympic sport, that those chutes where you just would go down the sled and you couldn't turn any other way. You just would go straight down. And what I learned through this program is that I can develop new chutes. That I had this one chute that regard, you know, feel bad, eat. Feel good, eat. Feel this, eat. You know, happy, eat. Sad, eat. Depressed, eat. And now what I get is a whole box of tools, but it's only through the action and taking the action in the program. So I think that's, let me just see if there's anything else that I wanted to say. There was a fellow who, longtime program guy, who said that in the beginning, what people ask me to do is to take actions I don't yet believe in. So coming in, when people said, take these actions and your obsession will be relieved, I didn't believe that for myself, but I could live on the borrowed hope of other people who told me, well, you know, that was my experience too. And then the one other thing is that all of these I call them tools, skills, whatever, they all can be nurtured. It's not like as though I just wake up grateful, and I may have said this in some other way and I apologize, but that I can plant these seeds, and that the seeds that I planted yesterday of gratitude and acting as if keep blossoming in ways that I just have never been able to, would have never expected. And I do say this truly, that anything that happens in my life today, adversity, which I used to avoid like the plague, has really become a value that I did not previously recognize, because it's an opportunity for me to really let this program work, you know. And I think that's about it. So thank you. And I guess now is the time that, so thank you. And I don't know what else to do at this point. So people will share for 3 minutes. Is that, let's see how it goes. Yeah, others who share will be, okay. So others who share, we'll set the timer for 3 minutes, and anyone who would like to come up, and, or you can, you do have to come up because of the speaker.
I'm Judy Grateful, recovering compulsive overeater, and I wanted to speak just a little bit about the attitude of gratitude. My higher power is one that I conceive of as a creative force, and it does have a religious perspective to it, but this creative force, for me, gratitude is every day finding, like that movie, Proof of Life. Because if I'm alive, my higher power is working. And in the big book, it talks about our instincts, which are basically our needs for survival and for love and for belonging and for sustenance and all the things that our nature gives us. And if I'm alive and I'm getting some results in my life in one of those areas, I can find something to be grateful for every day. And if I can know in myself that my higher power is providing for me life in one area, you know, like a job, then I can believe that there is a higher power to provide something else for me in another area. And not every area is working at all times. But for me, I look for that proof of life, and I can find that, and I can be grateful for that proof of life. Then I will know my higher power is there, and I can translate that gratitude into acting as if in that other area of life. And part of what I do professionally is counsel people who've lost their jobs. And, you know, that's a real hard thing to talk to somebody who's just gotten a pink slip in this economy. And I do it on a daily basis, and I use this program, and that works. You know, it isn't all over in every area of your life when you lose one thing. And so in this program, that's what I've learned, is that I can find that proof of life, that proof of success in one area. And for me, it may not be perfect abstinence, but it's that little tiny one step at a time. If I didn't overeat at this meal, if I didn't say an unkind word today, you know, all those things, I can find that proof that I am alive, that my higher power is giving me that creative spark that I can translate. Thank you.
I'm Jim. I'm an overeater. And this is an interesting thing because last year I had I relapsed and had the worst year of my life for a lot of reasons. And looking back, you know, I realized a lot of that was self-made. You know, it was my thinking made, you know, the economy was bad and everything else. But, you know, a good portion of that manifested by my thinking. I sat on the pity pot last year so much that I thought I had a permanent red ring on my butt, because that's all I did was just whine about, you know, how bad things were. And when I started changing that, one of the things I did was, sounds silly, is I started going around wherever I was and saying, you know, thank you for this wonderful alarm clock. Thank you for this wonderful pencil. Thank you. And just everything I saw in my life. And another thing is I realized that I have like a negative filter. You know, when things come down, all the positives get filtered out and the negatives are what I see. And if that's all I see, that's all I see. And so, you know, I started looking around at all those things, just everything in my life. And, you know, all of a sudden that filter kind of let the positives come down. But not only did I see the positives, I started seeing the positives that had always been there. You know, they weren't coming into my life. They were just there. And, you know, another thing is I found God is, and, you know, my newer definition is, you know, only one place in my life, and that's in the moment, and that's like right here, right now. And, you know, so a quote I heard just recently is, you know, looking for God is like a swimming fish in the ocean, you know, looking for water. You know, I don't need to look for God. It's everywhere. It's all around me. And you know, they say if you change the way you look at things, you know, you're going to start what you look at will start to change. And I mean, everything around me, I'm changing the way I'm thinking, but everything around me is just completely different. And I'm talking in, you know, less than 6 months. And, you know, how I feel, I realized when I had everything, or I thought I had everything, it was, you know, money and relationships and everything, and things just started to turn. You know, I still had pretty much all that, but they started to turn down. I mean, I thought it was horrible. All I did was stress and worry about those things. And now I've pretty much, you know, lost most everything I've had. And as everything is starting to turn and my attitude of gratitude is changing and it's just starting to make an upturn, I feel great, you know. So it doesn't matter where your relative position, at least not for me, is. It's the direction that my life is going. When I can see that it's getting better, I feel a lot better. And, you know, I kept complaining about everything I lost, and my sponsor said, so how's your mental health? And I said, well, actually, today it's never been better. And He says, how's your physical health? And I said, well, actually, today it's never been better. He says, how's your spiritual health? And I said, well, actually, yeah, today it's never been better. And he said, so what exactly did you lose? You know? And I just, it blows me away that, you know, here I just, if all I focus on is the stuff that I lost, that's all I'm going to see. And the last thing is I wanted to say, what I ask myself a lot in the last 6 months is what in this moment am I lacking? And when I ask myself that question, I've never been lacking a single thing. So, thanks.
Hi, I'm Harry G., grateful recovering person. I'm here to work on my overeater's characteristics. I first went to 12-step programs. I got to tell a little bit of my first story. I was positively negative. And if you know what that is, all you did was find and destroy. You nurtured resentments. I nurtured resentments till I destroyed the love of my family. I wasted a 25-year marriage. I helped destroy it. I took my part of it. I'm very grateful for the two boys and daughter I had, and I've made amends to them, and we've worked through some stuff. But it all boils down to awareness and acceptance for me. I got to be aware before I can accept. And once I'm aware and I get the positive and I work on it, I put it on my gratitude list. And I'm a grateful recovering person today, because if it wouldn't be for this program, this 12-step program, I wouldn't be here today. I'd be dead. So that's what it boils down to. So I come here for focus. The other 12-step program don't talk about gluttony and sloth. They don't talk about that. You get in here and you find solutions. And I found a lot of solutions. I got a good gratitude list. I'm grateful for 17 grandkids. I helped Judy raise 4 boys. We got 6 boys and a girl between us. Oldest is 50. What's the youngest one? She keeps track of the names and ages. But anyway, it's been a real journey. And I got Parkinson's now. I got diagnosed with Parkinson's in 98, but I still use the principles of this program to get through a day. Easy does it. First things first. Stay in the here and now. Don't let that negative bite you, get a hold of you, and hang on to you. Turn it around. Be aware. Use the tools. Sponsorship. Have a good sponsor. I say get a sponsor that knows more than you do. He's got more time than you do in this program that you're in. And follow his advice. Don't let him be a person that co-signs your bullshit. Because you can get into that attitude by being negative. And you're going to have to make amends anyway if you work in the steps. So get a good sponsor. Work the program to the best of your ability and resolve and dissolve your resentments. Every problem I've ever had started with a resentment. And if I'm nurturing a resentment, I'm tearing myself upside down. That old ping pong ball is going left brain, right brain, left brain, right, looking for a chairman. And I ain't the chairman, and there ain't one up there. Thank you for being here.
I'm Judy again. I sort of apologize for taking a second time, but I wanted to do one more little explanation. I left out a really important part of what I was sharing with you, and that's about the proof of life. And coming from where I come from, I just assume you know what I'm talking about, and you probably don't. The proof of life is what authorities ask for of people who are taken hostage. You know, so they want to know if this person has been found, if they really have. And there was a movie about that. But that's what I was talking about. We are emotionally taken hostage when we're in our disease. I'm emotionally taken hostage when I'm in my disease. And when I'm taken hostage, what I look for is my proof of life to get out of it with the gratitude. So I just wanted to explain that part about the emotional hostage. Thank you.
I'm Brandy. I'm a compulsive overeater. I, like everybody else, when I read the session for this, I'm like, drama queen. Yeah, I totally fit that build. And I think for me, the reason why I came back to OA after, I came in OA when I was 16 and stayed for about 10 years and had really good recovery. And then left for 5 and had some kids and did life a bit outside of OA and made my story again physically and ate and had so much drama in my life. And I was grateful for nothing. But yet I had so many great things in my life to be grateful for. But I couldn't see them because I was busy in the food and blaming other people for the mistakes that I had made. And so what I realized when I came back to OA is that I have to be grateful and I have to really appreciate the things that I do have in my life. I mean, you know, like I live in Canada and I still have so many things in my life that are good. And I have 2 beautiful children, one of them I just had 8 months ago, and, you know, she was the reason why I came back, because I don't want to be the fat mom, and I don't want to be that yelling mom, and I don't want the things that come along with this disease. This disease is so dysfunctional, and for me, I need clarity, and I find that I'm really getting that this time, and coming here is just a gift. I'm so grateful that I was able to take the time and come, because I've seen people that have really good recovery, and I've seen stuff that I want, where I've been kind of lacking that in my program at home, where I don't see a lot of things that I want. People, there's not a lot of bigger people losing weight, and to me, when I look around and I'm like, wow, there's so many people here that have lost 100 pounds. And I am so grateful that people have taken the time in their lives to work the program. And because now I can ask them to help me. And, you know, it's the little things. It doesn't have to be the big things. And so for today, I'm grateful that, one, I have a program that I can come to, and that I'm not that yelling mom anymore, and that I have the ability to love. Because to me, that's what my higher power is love. And so I'm just, I can't say enough that I'm so grateful that everybody's here and that, you know, we're in this together, and I really feel a fellowship. And I think that we all have so much to be grateful for just being in OA. So thanks.
Hello, my name is Jenny. I'm a compulsive eater. I am so grateful to be here. And I just want to say that I am grateful. Instead of questioning everything that my higher power is doing or not doing for me, I am grateful to be here today exactly where I am supposed to be. And I am accepting that, and I'm very grateful for that acceptance. That's it. Thank you.
I am Brenda, recovering compulsive overeater. When I came back into program, I remember hearing people say at meetings that they were a grateful recovering or grateful compulsive overeater. You know, I wasn't so grateful when I came back here because I didn't want to be here. I came back kicking and screaming. Earlier I had told a little bit of my story, and my story was that I came into OA and then left for many years, and it took me a while to come back to the program because I knew I would have to get serious. I knew what the program entailed. And so now I can say, after 4 years of working the program and having a program that I have today, that I am a grateful recovering compulsive overeater because I've learned some tools and some skills along the way that have helped me to cope with life. And one of them is gratitude. I mean, an attitude of gratitude, especially when I'm in the dumps, is very hopeful. It's like seeing the little light at the end of the tunnel. I heard some people today talk about, you know, making that gratitude list. And when I first heard about it, I would sit down and write 5 things that I was grateful for. And I didn't, you know, like you were saying, I didn't really feel it. Intellectually, I could say, yeah, I have a roof over my head, you know. I have food to eat, I have, you know, a family, and so on and so forth. But, you know, eventually my feelings caught up with the words, and eventually it becomes a way of life. And that, to me, is what gratitude is. You know, you may not feel it at that moment, but acknowledging it and paying attention to it. And, I mean, there are some days where I can honestly say I get into bed at night and I say, I'm just so grateful for the day to be over. Because, you know, not every day is rosy. And in my fairy tale, in my magical world, you know, where I like to live, you know, it's to be rosy all the time. But that isn't real life. So in the grown-up world of reality, there are some days that are not so great. But if I can at least go through my day and find, you know, five things, you know, maybe it's that I made it to bed, you know, I am grateful I got my teeth brushed, I'm grateful I have a roof over my head. I can come up with 5 things just like that, really. And it's not that hard. But eventually, I find more and more things. And like you were saying, you know, I'm grateful for the pencil. I'm grateful for the cup. I'm grateful I have a cup of coffee. I'm grateful I have a cup of water. Gratitude is surrounds us. We can surround ourselves with gratitude. And it's a wonderful aspect of this program that I wouldn't probably have learned if I hadn't come here. So today I am a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. Thanks.
Harry G., grateful recovering person. I wanted to share with you that the last 156 days I've been abstinent, I've lost 86 pounds. And I've came back to this program to keep it off. To learn, to remember what I learned and put it to work for me. So I could be a better person. Thank you.
Jim, I'm an overeater, and you know, I was just listening to everybody that came up, and I was thinking about how you keep that, you know, how you keep that gratitude. And you know, I think about everything I had the first time I came in the program, and I had 2 incredible years. I lost the weight, my life was never better, business was good, you know, relationship was good, and everything. But I don't think I was really grateful. And you know, I look at how I lost those things. And, you know, it was ego, and it was greed, and it was pride, and it was all those things, you know. And I think about, you know, gratitude, and I was thinking, how do I keep that? And I was thinking, you know, humility. You know, I think it really comes down to being humble and never losing sight of that. And, you know, I was reading in the big book, The Spiritual Experience, but on the page just prior to that is the 12 traditions, but it's the long form. And you know, the last 12th tradition is anonymity, but, you know, anonymity, if you really look at it, is more than just not talking about other people. It's about not rising above anybody in this program. It's about everybody as an equal person. And you know, but when you read the long form, it kind of goes into more detail. And it talks about the way you keep this program. It says anonymity is really a spiritual tool. And it says the way you keep this program is humility. And, you know, so just when I was kind of listening to everybody talk about gratitude, I was thinking how important it is to, once you get it, how to keep a hold of that and the whole program. So, anyway, thanks.
Thank you.
If anybody else would like to say anything afterwards, is that one of the things that was really helpful to me when I came back was, so I don't know if you've heard about this, about the set-aside prayer. It's help me to set it, dear God, help me to set aside everything I think I know about myself, the disease, the steps, and you, for a deeper and a newer experience of myself, the disease, the steps, and my relationship with you. And I think part of gratitude is this attitude of seeing that my gifts sometimes come in unusual forms that I would not have ever imagined that they would be gifts. That I had this tendency of what a gift would look like. A gift should be wrapped up in a pretty present. I mean, you know, figuratively. But I wouldn't have ever said that my compulsive overeating was a gift, or that people's illnesses were a gift, or that, you know, some of the things that have happened to me were gifts. But what I have learned is that it's my attitude towards them. That the problems, I mean, I really thought at one point that because I'm in OA, all of my, I shouldn't have problems. You know, I've had enough, you know, that I should be spared of any problems because I'm a compulsive overeater who's now working a program, and my life should just be like a little fairy tale. And what I've learned is that it's, you know, that what I get is I get life on life's terms, and the gratitude comes in that I've got a program, a way of living, a design for living, that that helps me, that undergirds me living life on life's terms. And that sometimes those gifts, what looks like could be a tragedy, and in some cases has been, there is some sort of a hidden gift in that, even if it's just that I was abstinent through it. You know, and that I learn how to feel pain. I learn how to grieve the loss of people, and also that I feel an incredible amount of joy in other ways too. So I think on that note, unless anybody else would like to speak, shall we just end early? If anybody, okay. So how about we close with the Serenity Prayer?